Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda So we'll start by Madhya 1. Later pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. I shall read the verses before that. Matulyarnasti patmatma na paradicha kaschana parihari pila jayame kimbruve purushottama. My dear Lord, let us inform you that no one is more sinful than us, nor is there any offender like us. Even if we want to mention our sinful activities, we would immediately become ashamed and what to speak of giving them up. Purport, this is a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-2-154 by Srila Rupa Goswami. Patita pavana hetu tava tomar avatar ama va I jagate patita nahi ar. Does it sound familiar? You heard that before? Patita pavana hetu tomara avatar. Two brothers submitted, my dear Lord, you have incarnated to deliver the fallen souls. You should consider that in this world there is none so fallen as us. Jagai marai dui karle udara. Jagai marai dui karle udara. Tahan udari te shrama nahila tomara. You have delivered the two brothers, Jagai and Madai, but to deliver them, you did not have to exert yourself very much. Brahmana jati tara navadvi pegar nichi seva nahi kare nahi nichera kurpara. The two brothers, Jagai and Madai, belonged to the Brahmin caste, and their residence was in the holy place of Navadvi. They never served low-class persons, nor were they instruments of abominable activities. Text 194, which is on the board there. Sabe eka doshitara hai papachara.
Sabe eka doshitara hai papachara.
Paparasi dahe nava nama vasei tamara.
Paparasi dahe nava vasei tamara.
Sabeya eka doshatara haya papachara.
Sabeya doshatara haya papachara.
Paparasi dahi nama basei tamara.
Paparasi dahi nama basei tamara.
Sabeya eka doshatara haya papachara. Paparasi dahi nama basei tamara.
Paparasi dahi nama.
Who can guess what the translation is? It's a little hard. Here it's translated as Jagai Madai had one fault. So Sabe, them, Sabe in all, Eka only one dosha, fault. So only Jagai Madai, so Sabe refers to them. Jagai Madai. They had only one fault. Tara means them. And Haya. Haya papachara. They were attached to sinful activities and they had volumes, paparasi, dahe. However, volumes of sinful activities can be burned to ashes simply by taking a dim reflection of your holy name. So, repeat the translation again. Jagai Madai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. And the purport Prabhupada writes, Sri Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami presented themselves as being lower than the two brothers, Jagai and Madai. They were delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who were delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From Rupa Goswami and Sanatan compared themselves to Jagai and Madhai, they found themselves inferior because the Lord had no trouble in delivering two drunken brothers. This is so because, despite the fact that they were addicted to sinful activity, in other ways their life was brilliant. They belonged to the Brahmin caste of Navadvipa, and such Brahmins were pious by nature. Although they had been addicted to some sinful activity due to bad association, those unwanted things could vanish simply because of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Another point for Jagai and Madhai was that, as members of a Brahmin family, they did not accept service under anyone. The Shastras strictly forbid a Brahmana to accept service under anyone. The idea is that by accepting a master, one accepts the occupation of a dog. In other words, a dog cannot thrive without having a master, and for the sake of pleasing the master, the dogs offend many people. They bark at innocent people just to please the master. Similarly, when one is a servant, he has to perform abominable activities according to the orders of the master. Therefore, when Dabirkas and Sakara Malik compare their position to that of Jagai and Madhai, they found Jagai and Madhai's position far better. Jagai and Madhai never accepted the position of serving a low-class person, nor are they forced to execute abominable activities under the order of a low-class master. Jagai and Madhai chanted the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by way of blasphemy, but because they simply chanted his name, they immediately became free from the reactions of sinful activities, thus later they were saved. Sabeka doshitara haya papachara paparasi dahinama base tomara. Jagai and Madhai had but one fault. They were addicted to sinful activity. However, volumes of sinful activity can be burned to ashes simply by a dim reflection of the chanting of your holy name. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Buddhaya Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutun Deva Koravani Bhujarane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Siddharana. I have personal experience of the fact that the dogs, they bark. Every day when we walk around the area, the path and rut on the hill there, there's always the dogs that bark. And there's particularly one little dog. Whenever he's there, he immediately begins to bark. But he's actually quite timid. He barks the loudest, but he's the most afraid. But I had experience one time his master was there, who was a former policeman. And just to impress his master, he went wild. Barking, he ran up to me, he started to nip. He had to impress his master that he was actually doing a good job. So his master said, only 3 months old. Try to excuse him. So, this is the... Generally, people are in this mentality that if you become a servant of someone, then immediately you have to impress him that you're actually doing a nice service. Because most people don't do a nice service unless the master is there. When the master is there, they put on a special show. And when the master is not there, then they go back to the normal routine of hardly doing anything. Prabhupada says that generally he gave the example of a Shudra, that in India, especially in Calcutta, there are many Shudras who run services and messages for their master. So their general business is that they take the message and then they go to the park and they sleep for 3 or 4 hours. And then they wake up and they come back to the master and say, and the master says, oh, what happened? He said, well, I couldn't deliver the message. We were running all over the city looking for this person, but just couldn't find him. We did such a heavy job, I think I need some rest. This is the general mentality of the Shudra. He thinks that if I can get 3 or 4 extra hours of sleep in, that's my gain. But here it mentions that Jagai and Madhai, they were not under the directions of anyone. They did not have any master. In that way, they were free They were free either to become the greatest rogues because they had no one to direct them, or when they took the devotional service, they didn't have any obligations either. So this is one of the ideas of self-sufficiency, is that in modern society, everyone feels dependent. Just like we have experiences, sometimes the devotees, they feel embarrassed to even go outside the temple with a dhoti on or a sari. They wonder what people will think about them. So even to go around the corner in some cities, the devotees, they put on regular clothes just so they won't be recognized as devotees. So where does this mentality come from? It especially comes from the mentality of being fearful because we're feeling ourselves very much dependent on the present society. Although we may be very expert at criticizing the present society, but we know that if we're in the same position as most people are, that if somehow or another the grocery store has run out of food or the markets ran out of food, then we'd all go hungry. Because fortunately there's some berries around here. We could go out and search for some berries. But it probably wouldn't be our choice of prasad. So therefore, generally speaking, especially those who live in a city, they know they're dependent on so many things. They're dependent on the electricity, they're depending on gasoline, they're depending on the trucks, they're depending upon the stores, they're depending upon the mass agribusiness, which has big, huge tractors. Some of the tractors are, I don't know how big they are. I saw some wheels up to the ceiling. The wheels are just up to the ceiling in this room. So you can imagine what the tractors look like. And they're plowing thousands of acres, one tractor. One person is plowing and harvesting thousands of acres. And we're all depending on this just to eat. And without eating, everyone will not be very blissful. Just like we had one or two fast days, but imagine having a fast day for a whole month, a month fast. Some of our enthusiasm would probably be lost in the meantime. So in that way we feel dependent on our light and the water and the food. And this, of course, we may protest, but we don't want to protest too hard. Just like in our society, we have our public relations. So public relations is nice. The problem is that our main public relations should be the very behavior and the qualities of the devotees. But sometimes, just so that we don't get too unfavorable publicity, we have our public relations. So part of that is also the fear principle, that if we become too unpopular in the eyes of people, maybe we won't get enough chapatis to eat. But Jagai Madai, or those in the Brahmins, they were not dependent upon, or at least their dependence was minimized. There are different levels of Brahmins, but generally the Brahmins did not have any master. They weren't working part-time or full-time for anyone. They simply depended upon maybe some begging, or maybe they had their own land that they would grow some food on, but never they would accept anyone as their master. And the perfection of being a Brahmin was to become a sannyasi, and there are different degrees of sannyasa also. But ultimately, the more one is renounced, the less he is dependent. Just like there's a type of sannyasa called Madhukara, where one would go from door to door and beg just a little bit for everyone. Then there's another level of sannyasa, which Madhavendrapuri was at, where he'd sit down in one place, and if someone would offer him food, then he'd eat. And if no one offered him food, then he wouldn't eat. So that's quite an advanced state of sannyas. Then there is one called agara vritti, the adopting of the mode of a python. Prahlad Maharaj, one time he was walking, and he met one saintly person who had adopted this agara. Agara means python. And vritti means the mode of living of a python. He'd simply sit there like a, and if anything was offered to him or came by his way, then he'd eat. And Prahlad Maharaj was actually quite surprised because he was fat. So it appeared that although he was just like a python, but it seems like many people came and offered him food. People came to see the python man and throw him some food. So it is not that if one adopts or depends upon Krishna, then one will starve to death. The example is given of Narada Muni. He met one hunter when he came to the earth planet. He saw one, first he saw animals. They were half killed and they were flapping on the ground. He found one rabbit with an arrow through its body and it was flapping on the ground in great pain, being half killed. And he saw one deer with its legs broken and it was flapping on the ground and half killed and suffering. And then he was wondering, who is killing these animals? So he walked across the path of the forest, and all the other animals on the path, they all became frightened and they ran away. So there he saw Mrigari. Mriga means animal, and Ari means enemy. He saw the personification of the enemy of the animals, Mrigari. And Mrigari became very disturbed that why did this man come and frighten away all the animals? So he's about to curse Narada Muni, but due to Narada Muni's presence, because Narada Muni is such a saintly person, he didn't curse Narada Muni. Instead, he became dumbfounded, and he asked, "My dear sir, dear saintly person, why have you spoiled my hunting?" Narada Muni said, "Well, I came here to ask you one question." So the hunter said, "No problem. If you want something from me, then please tell me. I'll give you whatever you want. I have so many tiger skins and deer skins, and if you want a couple of rabbit skins, I can give you whatever you want. Give you a rabbit foot for good luck." But Narada Muni said, "No, I don't want any of these things. I just want to know that why is it that you're half killing animals? They're flapping on the ground in great pain, and you're killing them like that. Why don't you just completely kill them? Because you're accruing a great sin by half killing them and causing them to suffer unnecessary pain." Mrigari said, "Well, this is what my father taught me. He was also a hunter, and he taught me how to half kill animals and take great pleasure in seeing them suffer." Narada Muni, of course, revealed to him that due to the suffering, that these animals are waiting for you, and after you leave your body, they'll attack you in so many different ways, and you'll have to suffer unbearable pain for many lifetimes. The hunter, after seeing the vision that Narada Muni produced for him, became very frightened, and he fell down at the lotus feet of Narada Muni and begged him to tell him how to become free from the sinful reactions. Narada Muni advised him to break his bow, and then to come back to him, and he would give him instructions how to follow a religious life. But the hunter was very much afraid of breaking his bow. He said, "How can I live? If I break my bow, how will I support myself?" But Narada Muni said, "Don't worry, I'll explain it to you." So he broke his bow, fell down at the lotus feet of Narada Muni, and he told him to build a little cottage and chant Hare Krishna near a tulsi leaf, and that Narada Muni would personally send him every day some prasad to eat. The hunter did this. He shaved his head, and with his wife, they constructed a little thatched cottage and had a tulsi leaf plant there, and they chanted Hare Krishna, and the word got out that Mrigari, the enemy of the animals, had now become a saintly Vaishnava. So needless to say, many people came to see how this mean hunter had become now a saintly Vaishnava. So every day so many people would come to see him, and he got so much prasad, he didn't know what to do with it. One day, Narada Muni with his friend Parvati Muni, they were coming to see this Mrigari, the former Mrigari, who is now a saintly person. And this former hunter was rushing towards, when he saw Narada Muni, he was rushing towards him to pay his obeisances and to greet him. But on the way, he was dusting the ground. So Parvati Muni inquired, "Why is it that your disciple is exhibiting such strange behavior?" And Narada Muni said, "He sees that there are ants on the ground, and now he's dusting them away because although formerly he took pleasure in half-killing animals, now he won't even hurt an ant." So Parvati Muni was very impressed, and he said, "Surely you're a touchstone." And then Narada Muni spoke to his disciple and said, "My dear sir, how is everything going?" He said, "Everything's going all right, but I only have one request. You promised that you'd send me enough food every day for my family, but you're sending me too much. And now we're getting fat. So please don't send us so much prasad, we don't know what to do with it." So Narada Muni was very pleased with his disciple. The idea is that if one depends upon Krishna and the spiritual master, then certainly Krishna will supply the necessities that we need. Of course, maybe not to the extent that we may covet. Generally, people think that they need a lot more than they actually need. This is called ati ahara, collecting too much or eating too much. If one eats too much or collects too much, then certainly prayasas is there. Prayasa means over-endeavoring. One must endeavor more than is necessary. Economic development. As soon as there are atyahara, calm, or collecting too much, then there must be prayasas, over-endeavor. Either to get more or to maintain what one has. One will have to endeavor greatly. And then prajalpa, one will not have any time to read about spiritual knowledge, and one will have to talk so much nonsense in order to get the money. Prajalpa. One will always be talking, "Money, money, where is the money?" Just like the birds, they're always talking. We can hear in the morning the birds is discussing, but here at least they're not discussing Krishna Katha. Maybe in Vrindavan they're discussing Krishna Katha, but here most of the birds are actually in Maya. Completely absorbed in Maya and just talking about economic development. Cheap, beep, beep, where's the worm? Beep, 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 the worm's over there. Beep, 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 thank you. So this is what they're discussing, simply where is the money, where is the worm, etc. But if a human being is only absorbed in this, then his life is considered to be a failure. Prajalpa and Niyamagraha, even he follows some rituals or religion, he has no idea what it's all about because he never has the time to find out, nor does he have very much interest. He thinks that I'll perform some religious function because this will provide me, help me get my worm. And sometimes he may even neglect religious activities and act completely irreligiously because he has no idea, having no time to find out about spiritual knowledge, what is the value of spiritual activities. Therefore, he rejects them as being superficial. He sees others, they're engaged in superficial religious activities because they're anxious to get worms, but he's getting a worm even without engaging in such superficial religious activities. Therefore, he even gives up normal religious life. And jana sangas triloyam cha shadvir bhakti pranashati. And therefore one's association will certainly be materialistic, and one will simply be hankering for more and more materialistic sense gratification, more and more materialistic accomplishments. When one's only happiness is in sense gratification, then simply he'll become greedy for whatever satisfies his senses. And when his senses can't be satisfied, when his greed becomes unlimited, then it turns into anger. And from anger comes illusion, from illusion comes bewilderment to memory, from memories and bewildered intelligence is lost, and then you find modern society. So this starts out from over-dependence on materialistic ideas, over-dependence upon this idea of becoming, being supported by persons who are practically by degraded persons, or by anyone. A Brahmin who's supposed to be in the mode of goodness, if he feels dependent on others, then he'll certainly become degraded, or he won't be able to make advancement, because he'll have to do what's necessary in order to please those persons he's dependent upon, and therefore will become very difficult for him to do those activities which are displeasing to those persons he depends upon. And those activities which are displeasing are probably the very basic principles of religious life. Just like in modern society, the basic principles are illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. People are working hard, basically, to indulge in these four sinful activities. And therefore, those who are opposing these four sinful activities are generally not going to be looked upon very favorably by the majority of people in society. If you told people in France that they had to give up drinking wine, I don't think it would be very popular. Or if you told people in most countries that how sinful meat eating is, most people would not be very much. If we were in power, if the devotees were in power and we immediately banned illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, there would be a revolution to get us out of power. So the idea is that the more we become independent in our livelihood, this is one of the ideas of self-sufficiency, then the more we'll feel stronger in order to protest these activities that are going on. The more we'll have the confidence that we are not dependent upon these modern society, and therefore we can actually strongly and clearly explain what the ills are. But because we ourselves are bound up and caught up in modern society, depending upon it, therefore we don't protest sometimes very loudly. But, for instance, even in America, in the 1700s, especially, or before that, wasn't so much before that, but the Americans, they were all farmers. I guess here also in Europe, most people were farmers. And because they were farmers, they didn't really care very much for the government. The government, what did the government do for them? Not much. What does the government do for you? I mean, sometimes, I guess in America, if they were in the Wild West, the government would send some cavalry or something to kill off the Indians. But besides that, the government wasn't really so much important in people's lives. What was important is that there was sufficient rain and sunshine. They were able to harvest the crops. That's what people thought about. They were actually more dependent upon God than on the government. They had some idea that God was supplying the rain, and if God was pleased, they'd get enough. Their crops would come in. Therefore, on the American bill, they put, "In God we trust." And the early fathers, they weren't so much even into democracy. The people who had the power were the landed aristocracy, and the common people who were uneducated, they didn't even have a vote. That it was founded more or less on economic principles, but the people who were founding it were more God-conscious because they were less dependent upon artificial things. They had a closer, they had more of an understanding that ultimately God would supply their necessities, not the government. But nowadays, now that people have gotten off the land, they've moved into the cities, and they're more or less, so many people are useless, they're depending more on the government check, on the Social Security or whatever else they're getting. They're depending more on that. And therefore, whatever the crazy thing the government does, they don't protest. They think as long as my check comes in, everything's all right. They can do whatever crazy thing they want. To such an extent, as I mentioned the other day, that I was reading that they made it mandatory for all the soldiers in all the armed forces in America to take a vaccination of anthrax. So anthrax is a deadly disease used in biological warfare, which kills people in a horrible way. So they invented this injection against it, this vaccine against it. They didn't really test it out, so they don't really know how it worked. So I guess there's 2 or 3 million soldiers in America, so they decided to test it out on them. And they ordered them, they all had to take the vaccination. And some of them, they protested, and they had to leave the services because they were court-martialed or they had to resign from their positions. So it turns out that, why is it they were giving all these soldiers against anthrax? As it turns out, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest ranking soldier, happened to have a 30% interest in the company that had had 15% interest in the company that was selling the vaccinations to the armed services. So he was literally making millions of dollars by injecting all these soldiers with anthrax vaccination. No one really knew what the results are, but one person knew what the results are. He was going to make millions of dollars. Of course, later on he resigned, but he happened to get a good position with a company that was making the anthrax. Not only that, but the company that was making the anthrax vaccination only was charging $4.95 for the vaccination, but the army was paying $10 and something for each vaccination. Of course, there were one or two protests, but their protest was quickly lost in the ether, and that's life in the big city. Of course, one would think that this is crazy, or this is certainly abnormal, that how is it that in such a big country as America, which is supposedly founded for the benefit of the people, how is it that such things can go on? But this is because the way America is organized. The people are completely dependent, practically speaking, in the modern society, and especially in the Western world, people are completely dependent upon the system, and if anyone protests too much, then they take them away, and no one else protests in fear of becoming chastised by the system. Even if one is, with some of the examples, just like Sataputta and Dhrutakarma, give the example of one anthropologist who was investigating some ruins. She found out that the ruin, she was asked to date the ruins, how old they were. She did her dating. She was had her specialty in dating. She discovered that her dates came out to 400,000 years, the dates of the bones and whatever else was there. But it was only supposed to come out to 100,000 years according to common opinion. So immediately, there was a protest by the authorities in her field that this is not possible, you better change your dates, you got it all wrong. But she wouldn't do it. So the result is that she was fired from her position. Not only fired from her position, but she couldn't get a position in her field anywhere else. So she was doing what she was supposed to do. She was supposed to be a scientist. She was supposed to report what the current tests are. She reported it. But they didn't like what the results are. The powers in her field didn't like the results. When she wouldn't change the results, when she decided to become keep being a scientist rather than a business lady, she was fired and she lost her position in her field. So this is just one example, and she's not the only example. And it's not that even ourselves were that much removed from dependency upon modern society. So hopefully in the future, our society will become more economically self-sufficient, and therefore we'll be able to probably see a difference in our mentality also, in our conviction, in our strength to be able to present things to modern society in a more straightforward way. So I'll stop there. It's pretty late, actually. Yes.
How dependent on present society influence other society in the Krishna consciousness?
Oh, that because we're so dependent, it's probably hard to figure it out. But we don't protest so much. Sometimes, even things are going wrong, we're not so quick to protest either. But it remains to be seen. The Brahmin is supposed to be independent in his livelihood, and the devotee is supposed to be completely dependent on Krishna. So somehow or another, perhaps if we can become aware of the spiritual platform, aware of our spiritual identity, then gradually our feeling of dependency will diminish. Instead of becoming dependent on the material energy, we'll become independent, the strong to depend upon Krishna. Yes.
Perhaps more about the Brahman initiation, you took a job somewhere, and
you took a what?
The job by some boss. So and actually, I doubt about his behavior. So I asked him how can you do this when you're a Brahman? So why you're doing this? Because normally in Brahman, actually you don't take a job, normally you don't do it. But he said that. Actually, Brahman is also like a worldly designation. And we have to become a worldly designation. Ultimately, we are Vaishnavas, and we do what is necessary according to time, place, and circumstances. So I want to know what is your opinion about this.
Well, I don't know. It's too complicated. It's just... Prabhupada didn't... He sometimes had the devotees work a job, so... In our present position of our society, I don't think we can get too much concern in all the details. But we should try to strive. We should understand what the effect is also on our consciousness. But there's so many factors that go into every decision. That's only one factor. Yes.
We can mean the quality of the shudras which are quite high. The shudras you mentioned, they didn't have such qualities that be responsible in service of the master and very faithful. These are Kali Yuga shudras.
No. Kali, obviously they're in the Vanashram system and they have some qualities. So they were, we ourselves were born shudras. Kalo Shudra Sambhava, but by our education we become less than an animal. After going through college for so many years, then we wind up less than an animal. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that more or less modern education turns a Shudra, a human being, because they're still almost in the human being category, turns them into an ass. So, to become a bona fide Shudra again would require some training. Yes.
I think Prabhupada is speaking about there is this picture in Third Kanta about Devi Vaidashana, that when someone is Shudra, but still he is Krishna conscious, because his body is on a level of.
Krishna Vaishnavas aren't Shudras or Brahmins or anything in that regard, because their consciousness is different. But one who's doing the activity of a Shudra, Devi Vaidashana, first of all, generally means. The Vanashram system, which is not based upon birth, it's based upon quality and work. So if one is doing the work of a Brahmin, then he's considered a Brahmin. If one is doing the work of a Kshatriya, he's considered a Kshatriya, not just by birth. That's Daivi Vanashram. But Prabhupada gave a very elaborate understanding of how we'd apply Vanashram. We might apply it as an example for people, not that we become Shudras. But that means that the Vaishnava, when he acts as a Shudra, he doesn't indulge in sinful activities, like the Shudras may. Not that I'm a Vaishnava, I'm indulging in sinful activities as a Shudra, but actually still I'm a devotee. No, that's not. Then he's really a Shudra. But a Vaishnava, he may take up the work of a Shudra, although he still acts as a Vaishnava. He's still in Krishna consciousness. He may do the work. Just like he may clean the toilets, or he may do, you know, plow the fields or something, but that doesn't mean he's become whatever, you know, that designation. He's still beyond the designations, because his consciousness is beyond the designations, and his actual activities are beyond those designations. He still follows all the principles of Vaishnava. Yes.
Was it the Vaishnava
and the Vaishnava had a few other faults. Vaishnava is very kind. Also, they're very humble here. They're really trying to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So they're saying, Patita Pavana Hetu Avatar, you've come to deliver the most fallen. So somehow or another, within their heart, they're seeing themselves as even fallen than Jagai Mata. So they were good candidates for getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So they were dwelling on all the good qualities they could find in Jagai Mata. Not that we're the second most fallen, so, you know, take into consideration, give us some mercy too. We come after Jagai Mata. Grantra Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.